to take an intro.
Well, why don't you get your favorite hanging on there? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. Now, come here, let me show you something. I like the Blue Balls.
Nueve. Blue Balls NYCFC. Season 9.
I like the Blue Balls. The Blue Balls.
Nueve.
Blue Balls.
Season 9. Nueve.
All right, I've gassed myself up on this Corona Light, so I'm going to be belching my way through this episode. Here we go. Like a game of paintball played with screen cleaner. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckhardt, and I am your intrepid co-host, 8 years and running, and this is my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week?
Yeah, what's up? How are you?
What?
I'm trying to bring some more positive energy, man. Every time we're just like,
you think it's dry,
whatever.
You think it's dead? That's so fucked up.
No, not you. I'm literally talking about only me.
I see. You're like you're trying to bounce it back. You're giving me a little attention, a little TLC. Yeah. All right, well, ask me again. I'll tell you how I'm doing.
How are you doing?
Oh my god, dude, I'm so tired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't ask. So. Don't bother. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about how I'm doing.
No one. Hey, let me tell you something. No one asked, okay?
That's
you
true.
You told me to ask you.
You did ask the first time.
I know, but that was more of a casual, like, you know, you say.
I'm trying to set up my bachelor party, Trey. Trey, what are you doing the first weekend of May?
The first weekend of May, I will be in Miami.
God damn it. Okay. All right, well, I literally can't do it any other time.
Yeah. Do you mean the last weekend of April?
No. I mean the first weekend of May. The last weekend of April is not a weekend of May.
The first of May you're talking about.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong. Sorry.
No,
sorry,
I'm talking
sorry,
about the first
sorry.
Weekend of May. You're looking at the wrong year?
Oh,
what year are you looking
sorry.
At?
Sorry. Yeah. Oops.
Are you looking at a trip you took last year to Miami?
No. I'm looking at... I was wrong. I'm free.
Fuck yeah, dude. Do you want to go up to our friend's land and take mushrooms and camp?
I don't know who might listen to this. No, of course. Why not?
Of course not. Of course not.
Man, I'm so busy and I'm not even doing anything. I'm so busy with vacations and stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sounds like a hard life, dude.
I know, it's great.
You going to Miami the weekend before?
Yeah.
You and the wife?
Yeah, birthday present.
Oh,
late
fun.
Birthday present.
Yeah, that'll be good. Yeah, we talked about it. We talked about the you had the panic moment where you were like, uh-oh, is this birthday time? Or is this wedding time? Right? Or was that somebody
yes,
else?
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes, yes.
Good news. It's
yes,
not
I forgot to put time. Your wedding into my calendar, so I had to ask you if my birthday vacation will be okay. Whatever.
And
we're very busy. We have certain podcast things that might be happening right before then that are very exciting.
Yep, it's true. It's true. Some surprises we're going to be whipping out for y'all that require some preparation. We've been real lazy with it this year. This is going to feel this surprise that we've got prepared for you. That's going to feel like real whiplash. You know, I mean, I won't spoil it too much, but we're excited. We're putting some pieces together. It's been fun to be in this family, you know? It's been fun to be in this world, to live the podcast life with you all. There's always a surprise around the corner, you know? That's the advantage of creating something around someone or something that you love. The fandom is alive, and you never know what's going to come out of the woodwork. Isn't that right, Trey? What's the thing besides the soccer that this team has given you that you're happiest with?
Friends.
Who's your favorite? Name them. Who's the best one? And who's the worst? Who's the worst person you've met as a consequence of this podcast?
A few Nazis. Fortunately met them. No, I'm excited. There's a lot going on. Like I was just saying, met, you know, someone I met a while ago, one of my I have a drinking crew. You know, post-game, and you know how they're like, people that are like your best friends, because you're like after a game drinking with them, you drink for all hours, you talk about everything, and then you never see them outside of home games, but you still got that connection. And I found out, you know, at the home opener that one of my drinking buddies, Jordan, also likes golf. And now he is the first person in my life that likes golf. So, of course, I feel bad for him because now that's all I talk about. There's no one. Everyone hates golf, which I understand. I get it. I love it. I love watching it.
What do you like?
I'm watching every sport.
What do you like to watch about it? Because it's understandable that, you know, it's a very, it's probably more fun. It's neither, I guess for a lot of people, it's neither fun to play nor watch. And there doesn't seem to be that much overlap between people who watch and people who play it. What do you like about it as a man who I know for sure does not go golfing?
No, I don't. Well, of course, there's like this weird, like, you know, father, son, you know, kind of like watching golf as a replacement for having a relationship with my father. Put that to the side. I like, we'll get to the soccer soon, folks. You know how this goes. I like the fact that like you have like events, every event, every weekend has its own like character, like each, like, tournament is a character. Each course is like, you know, I follow soccer and football and whatever because like there's individuals and character. My brain has associated patterns and personalities to each player. And like in soccer, like fields have personality, but like in MLS they all suck and whatever. and frankly, like for the most part they're all similar, you know. Shout out, you know, San Jose's longest bar in North America. Love it. But it's not really a big part of, you know, watching their games. But in golf, it's like each course is 18 holes and they're all different. And they change the hole location every day. And if there's wind in the morning and wind in the afternoon, like it changes how you would tackle the hole. And like, you know, it's, and that's probably the biggest element is like the idea of like each course is a person that doesn't talk or move but has its own personality and its own 18 holes that like the Masters is this weekend. The most casual of golf fans watch the Masters this weekend, and like there's like holes that are legendary there, you know, and like that have their own names. They give them names, these holes, which is crazy. Whatever, who cares? Everyone hates golf. Everyone's gonna hate me for talking.
No, that's not true. No, that's not true. It's very zen, you know. We all had.
It's also zen.
It's an impossible task. How much do the courses change year over year? I mean, how much is done to them, even these legendary courses?
They change a little bit. Each hole changes a little bit. They might throw a little extra sand here, move something here. Most of the time now, like, golf is in a crisis point where players are too strong and the technology of the clubs and the balls is too good. So they're hitting the ball too far, which makes the holes easier. So they're now, most of the time, they're just moving the pin back. They're just moving the tee box back and back and back. That's the big... That's what's big in golf right now, is the idea of a rollback where they want to mandate weaker balls and all the players are pissed. Whatever, man. I feel like such a loser just talking about it.
No, it's not.
It's fun. The Masters is fun.
No worse. It's truly no worse than it is to have the conversations that we usually have on this podcast about soccer. It's just about having your audience oriented right. And we are going to reorient for our audience so we can talk about the two most boring matches of the season, these last two matches, would you say, Trey? I feel like boring is the name of the game. We've hit that part of the season. It always comes when there's a certain amount of rebuild, right? Things are just like, they're not bad, but they're not so good either. There's a lot of fumbling around, a lot of looking for the connection, a lot of looking for the repeatable attack, the sense of momentum, the instinct, and it's just not necessarily coming. I mean, it felt, to me anyways, like the improvements made for the New England game were meaningful, but not necessarily the finished article coming off of that disappointing Houston loss. Would you say so?
Sure, I would say so. I agree with your framing of all of this, but I wouldn't necessarily, you know, I want to be clear that boring is not bad, per se. Boring can be bad, but I think the team's, you know, coming off of this road trip is in a more optimistic place. Not as optimistic as coming off of, you know, our two home games, but as a continuation, I don't feel like we've necessarily regressed in any meaningful way over the last 3 weeks. But I think you're right. I think it was boring and difficult, and we skipped recording last week, and I was more than happy to, because dedicating a whole podcast to that Houston game would have been miserable. But things didn't, there was nothing necessarily unexpected in either of these games, I would say, either. That it was, a lot of things went as we described and as we planned and prepared, and I wasn't too disappointed in either result, to be honest.
Talk to me about that. You weren't disappointed in the loss against Houston?
Okay, I was disappointed because we lost on a shitty call. Like, that's always going to be disappointing. But I think Houston was the better team that night. And as we said in our last episode, like, they just matched up well. It was hard. It was difficult for multiple reasons. Like, firstly, I think the biggest concern with the Houston game was Chanot being gone. And we entered the season being like, Chanot needs to be, or will be, the expectation he would be an unimportant, less important player to this team than any time before. And that would prove not to be true. James Sands had to slide back, and he was great as a left center back because he's a very talented player and a very, I think it's good for him to show off that versatility. But it ruined everything else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When you're going against Ace Ace, who, you know, at his best is, as you know, as his former self would have been one of the best players in this league. But when he's playing at his best now in this kind of new version of himself, he is still a very good player. He's like Peyton Manning his first year with Denver or something. Like, the gas isn't there, but he still knows how to, you know, control a game. And he was coming off of, you know, the best Houston win in a very long time. And they were solid enough defensively. They were dynamic defensively. And yeah, they didn't have anything at the 10 really, or anything going forward, which is why they didn't score. Like, it was a good matchup. It was, that led to a boring game because that's what was going to happen. You had two teams that didn't have a forwards. You had two teams that were really solid in the midfield, and you had a hot night, a humid night in Houston away. Like, I would expect a 0-0 draw. And if it wasn't for like a really soft penalty call, like, that's what happened. You know, I think there was a lot of mistakes in that game. I think the spacing was all over the place in the midfield. They did a good job stretching us. Like, unfortunately, the thing about the Houston game, the biggest thing to come away with, is that fucking, this is the first time and hopefully the last time I say this, like, Benny Olsen coached a good game. He knew how to, you know, set up that mid block. And I mean, it was pretty low, but it wasn't as low as we've seen him play before. There was at least some determination by Houston to have the ball and keep the ball. And it really frustrated our team. And this is, they kind of stopped. They had a real blanket approach to facing us, and it worked. But, you know, I think Chanot being out and James Sands pulling back, and the fact that we signed, we don't have a third center back, even though we have two other center backs on the roster, is kind of threw the whole thing out of whack. I think it would be a much better game if we had James Sands and Keaton Parks in the midfield together, as opposed to separate.
Would you have made that alteration? I mean, like, would you have rather thrown in somebody like more on a rookie level and I don't know, exposed a vulnerability in center back? Or was it like, okay, we're just gonna do you think that the Cushing attitude was, let's muscle through this, and the best opportunity that we have to do that is to put our best available player in that position, which is going to be James Sands, and we'll just hope for a set piece goal, a wing and a prayer, or something.
That's the perfect question for this match. I think at holding both ideas in the same mind is, yes, I think that was the best way to go about it because of how effective James Sands is as a center back and was in that match. But I would be pissed at my front office for not having a good third center back when you know that Chanot is both 100 years old and constantly on international break. Like, I would hold both those ideas in my head. I think Cushing did the best he could in this situation, but, like, hello. That's not a situation I want to be in. Like, why bring James Sands back to play center back? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's great that we have that flexibility, but it sacrificed something good we were building in the midfield during our two home games.
Do you think, I mean, like, looking at that, I think my segue to the New England match then is about how James Sands moving back into the midfield created a sense of cohesion and excitement through the center, but also, like, helped us to identify the way in which the wings are not firing the way that we need them to at this time, right? Like, we reestablished a dominance that we have seen consistently throughout this season in the center, but then I think didn't quite get, I mean, like, there's sparks of things, right? But there's, like, just a lot of newness on the wings as far as attacking form that didn't really pay any dividends against New England, or paid more dividends than expected against, that could have been more threatening, ultimately, right? I mean, I can't help, the big story about the New England match, if we're okay to move on to the New England match, is about the Gabriel Seagal or Siegel? I heard Siegel on the broadcast.
Siegel.
All right.
I spelled his name wrong in the tweets, but, you know.
Oops.
We're learning, baby.
Right. Like, brand new number 9, lots to talk about there. But I think also as remarkable was that even out of the number 9 spot, Talish Magno didn't have a terribly impactful game here. It didn't solve the problem of what do you do with Talish. I mean, with the exception, obviously, of the goal. But this is a set-piece goal. It's not the same thing as, like, his talent as a player is not, on set-pieces is not the same thing as his talent in positions. And I didn't think that that we saw in regular play a ton to recommend him as, I don't know, a breakout force in this match.
Okay, so you mentioned three things.
I know, I'm all over that the place I want to touch.
No, it's fine. Three things. I just want to make sure I hit on all of them. So let's lay it out. You said the wings, you said Talish, and you said James Sands. Firstly, like, let's get James Sands out of the way, because the other two are related. What James Sands did in this match and how we deployed him was super important, and it was man-marking Carlos Heel 90% of the game. And if you're going to beat New England, that's a good way to do it, is to dominate in that way, is to just fucking have a good player shut down their best player. You know, the only time New England had something super dangerous, their goal, was because James Sands had a mistake. He fucked up. And it led to Carlos Heel both getting the ball because James Sands fucked up, but also James Sands not marking Heel, and led to a goal. And that sucks, but that's how it goes. Outside of that, Carlos Heel is, let's not forget, former MVP of this league and couldn't do anything. You know, super meaningful. Like, he had a good game, which is what you expect when a elite player is cracked down on in this league. So I was super impressed by that. That's a much better way to run, right? And then it opens things up for Keaton Parks, who also did not have his best game at all. But At least, you know, it's much better than Jameson's not being there and our midfield running around with our heads cut off, right? That's not something we could have done against Houston either, by the way, because Ace Ace is a much deeper kind of playmaker. But it really worked well against New England. So I think that covers that. Talking about like the wings in particular, you know, I do just want to put a little pin in this. I'm a big fan of Tavon Gray. I think he's one of the best one-on-one defending wingbacks in the league. It's hard to quibble with that. He's just extremely naturally talented at defending one-on-one and using his speed to cut down fast breaks at the same time. I think he's terrified to move forward, both because it's not in his skill set, also because he is not a natural wingback. That's something he learned more recently. And also, he seems terrified of balls getting over top of him, even though he shouldn't be because he has the skill set to manage it. But it really killed us against Houston because we were unable to defeat their lower block because we couldn't get any overloads on the wings. We couldn't overlap our wingbacks. That's something Tavon just doesn't really add to the game. And I think it's a little concerning that our, you know, right back that we just gave an extension to has had two separate injuries only, you know, a few games into the season. You know, separate conversation, just going to put that out there. It's a little concerning. I don't love when a player we give an extension to has two separate injuries within five games. I'm just saying, not my preference. Against New England, I think that's something we did really well on the wings, especially because they were running this, you know, 4-4-2 diamond, right? Where can you find some space and some, where can you, you know, put an overload, and it's going to be on the wings if you can push them back, hold possession, and keep their defensive backs out of the attacking phase, you're golden. And that's, we did a good job. And I think Siegel, to give him credit, you know, I don't think he did a lot in this match, which is fine. We don't ask a lot of him. We don't expect a lot of him, I should say. I think if I can point to one thing he did really well, it was creating overloads on the wing. He was, especially on the right side, he was really good at like moving into the space to help our team in possession, which led to a lot more opportunities and it led to a lot more possession. And it opened up Talish Magno, right? Talk about Talish. You know, I think you were being pretty critical, but not unfair, because even though he looked much, much, much better in this New England game, it was not a game-changing performance per se. But I think a lot of that has to do with, like, yeah, we don't have a striker. Like, if you're playing on the wing, you're not going to look good if you're the kind of wing player he is, if you don't have a striker. Like, Talish Magno was putting up the best, both pure numbers and underlying numbers, as a winger in this league when he had Tati Castellanos next to him, because his creativity that creates space, you know, if anyone can find space, it's Tati, you know. So I think he looked much more comfortable on the ball, much more comfortable out on the field running around. I think Siegel did a good job opening things up for him. I don't think Siegel did much outside of that, but that's okay. You know, he missed a pretty open opportunity too, but at least he was, you know, getting on the ball. Whatever. It was a fine, good first outing for Siegel.
Let's pause and talk about Siegel. I mean, like, what is this? How did we find ourselves here? I imagine there's a certain number of fans who are just like, who? What? What's going on? Like, what are we expecting from Gabe Siegel? And is it temporary or is it developmental?
Well, I think there was a few things surprising going into this match. Siegel the most, and then we have Thiago Andrade, who was MIA for reasons we now know, and that GP was on the bench. And all those things were surprising. I think that led to, it was just a clear indication from this coaching staff that they needed, how fucking putrid and boring that Houston game was, Like, they knew it, too. Like, they saw what we saw against Towson, that we couldn't do anything offensively. We couldn't keep the ball, and that things needed to change. So they took out the worst player, frankly, one of the most underperforming players of the season in GP, and they took out Talish from a position he just is not playing very well. And it opened things up. It was not perfect. It was not pretty. But as you said at the very beginning of this conversation, we're in that place. We're in the beginning of the season. We're in that place. And I don't know what led to those decisions. I'm assuming it's that they saw that things weren't working and they wanted to try something new. And they didn't sign Gabe Siegel just to hang out, you know? I think they had some kind of... I you know, they have to try him now because, you know, I strongly believe that they're looking for a full-time number nine. So you might as well fucking, you know, trot him out, see what happens. I have to burp, so say something.
I got nothing to say. That left me speechless.
Okay, I burped.
That not the commentary. The commentary was fine. The burp is the one that I was really enjoying.
I think that, you know, in the words of the prophet Tae Zonday, I moved away from the microphone so you couldn't hear it. I wouldn't see it anything more than the team signing. Look, and after the game, Nick Cushing said GP didn't start because he had a short off season and we played him 90 minutes in almost every game and 75 minutes, you know, in the match previous, and that he's tired and whatever. And like, okay, dude, like, I don't know if I believe you. You said James Sands would never play center back. And, you know, Nick Cushing loves to lie during press conferences.
Wouldn't you?
I think that's fine. Like, that's fine. Like, I know why he lies during press conferences. It's to either say the right thing or to throw people off the scent. All coaches in MLS do it to one degree or another. But I don't know. Because he set that precedent, I don't know if I believe GP was resting due to fatigue. Mm-hmm. We didn't play a midweek game. I think he was not playing well. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to try something new. And then he came on as a sub and played great. So, you know, good. That's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see him learn his lesson, come back out there, and fucking play well. And he did.
Yeah, because I think we continue to need what we called as our shot at the beginning of this season, which is to say a breakout year from GP. There's just not any other. Nothing else is materializing, frankly. But maybe there's nothing. Maybe there's much on the way. Who knows? I feel like the only other thing that I really wanted to evaluate here was the continued performance of Brian Kouffre, which I feel like... I don't know. I don't want to be fucking boring. Everything is in development. It's all like, oh, interesting. It's all data. It's just data aggregate. There's flashes of... like brilliance and flashes of connection, but the thing is not the thing is not settled. The lineup is not settled yet, is my experience of Kouffre so far. And I'm wondering what yours is.
Yeah, I still don't know. I still don't know what to think. It's hard. It's hard because it feels like he doesn't fit this team as constructed or this league at the moment.
How do you mean by that? By the league?
Like the recognition of the kind of like the physical specimens that like you're going to face on the wing has not hit him yet. Like the amount of like shoving and pushing and fouling and everything. And the fact that like out of nowhere, out of a very boring game, like a wingback can get sprung open. You know, I think MLS games are just a lot more unpredictable. I was about to say, because they're all bad. that moments of brilliance just kind of happen. But it's not because they're bad. It's just that there's a lot of parody and it's a lot of trying to force square pegs into round holes that teams do on a weekly basis that, you know, it's hard to get used to. And some players don't, and some players do. I think Kufre is getting used to it. The other half of my thought was that I can tell he's very talented, and he can add a lot to this team. He just needs to get used to, like, the idea of, like, no, dude, you got to play, like, consistent defense, but at the same time, like, also be a threat going forward. We're asking him to do a lot, I think is what I'm saying, is, like, we're asking a guy who's not used to the league and is not used to this team to fucking carry a lot of the workload both ways. And we're just seeing him get used to that. You know, and Houston, the most defensively sound we were all match was when he joined the defense and played, like, really low when Houston had extended periods.
Did you just belch again?
But yeah, that was nothing. Had extended periods of possession was when we looked the most sound, but we can't do that every game. We need him. That's the City Football Group way. That's what we need is him to create overlaps and to be dangerous. So I don't know. I'm still undecided when it comes. I'm not undecided when it comes to recognizing his talent. I'm still waiting to see him fit in, like, perfectly in a way that, like, a Matarita did on this team.
Yeah. I mean, the best that you can hope for in these situations is somebody who can really operate like a disruptor, who can use that, like, incongruency to to take control of the pace of the game, which it feels like is slowly what NYCFC is reorienting themselves around. And we just haven't seen that yet.
But it becomes like, it's like, does he know? The thing that's missing is, like, the recognition of, like, that thing's in a, to, like, better emphasize my point, like, the recognizing that things break down more often in MLS and that he needs to be more comfortable understanding the kinds of rotations he'll need to make, following certain defenders into the midfield, following certain defenders into the box, and allowing Thiago Martins to go out to the wing, and being comfortable there. And then, you know, how do you transition that forward in possession? Like, these are, like, hard things that many people and teams don't do very well, which is why defensive backs are so valued in this league as pieces of the puzzle. But I'm still waiting. I like him, but, you know, I want to see him fit more comfortably.
Here's the other one we got to ask about, because we took the week off last week. Our boy Richie Ledesma has two appearances now and a grand total of just under 45 minutes for this team. Two subs in. What's your take on Ledesma's contributions in the final quarter of each of these matches?
I think the Houston's a throwaway. I think it's an ugly game he came into. There was nothing going, and we couldn't ask for too much. After the New England game, I would say I understand why we sold Thiago Andrade. This kid is, he's good, man. He's good.
Speak he's on good. It. What makes him good? What's a
excited.
Good what way?
Good in that he just brought the energy up. He's just very tenacious and, like, super interested in making the passes, moving around, telling people what passes to make. You know, that's what you want from a sub appearance, by the way, is, like, someone to, like, be like, hello, we're playing a game. I know that you might be, like, tired and used to this game going a certain way. Me, the sub, is telling you, I'm here to help. I have full energy. And we can do different things. And, like, that's what I saw from him in the New England game. And that was super exciting. I love to see it. I love to see how he can he's so comfortable moving horizontally on the field, but also has, like, this versatility and this speed and quickness to move into the half spaces and create some dangerous passes. Like, it's all there, man. I'm super excited to see it happen. Very excited. I like it. I want to see more of him.
I feel like you will. I would count on it.
Especially last time we recorded, we didn't know the details of the deal. It is the most clear, like, mercenary signing we've ever made.
How do you mean by that?
I mean, we did not buy his rights from Salt Lake. We loaned his rights from Salt Lake to loan him from PSV for 1 year this season with no option to buy at the end of the loan deal. So there's like no, it is clear that this guy is here for a good time and not a long time. And so I expect them, I think that also functions into the loaning out of Thiago as well. But it shows that this team believes in him and that they're going to use him, baby. And good.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed it'll be productive. Speaking of the Thiago loan, is it talking points time?
Just final thoughts.
Yeah, drop
away. Away loss to Houston. That sucks. Difficult.
That's,
you know,
sucks
off
difficult.
A bad call. Yeah, whatever. You know, that was tough, but, you know, not, you know, we at least survived. We didn't get fucking shellacked. And then we were on the road back to back against the number one team in the East, by the way. A team that has not lost. Or maybe they lost once. I can't remember. The number one team in the East. We went to their home and we fucking played them to a draw. And we looked really good. We had more possession. We created more opportunities. That's good. That's good. We should feel good about what we did in New England.
Good, yes.
That's all I'm saying.
We should feel good about taking 1 point away from two matches.
Fuck you. You know what I'm saying? in fucking context, in a bubble. Not in a bubble. No, in a bubble. Not whatever. You get what I'm saying?
No, I know. I know, Trey. It's all right. Patience. We've counseled patience from the beginning. There's no reason we wouldn't start now. All right, now it's
okay,
time for talking
now,
points.
Yes. Okay, okay. Yeah.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points.
Bing bong, that was the Talking Points theme song, and these are the talking points. The first talking point is Thiago Andrade has been loaned out. There's not that much to say about this, Trey, I guess, except for the sort of cloak and dagger way in which it was executed, right? I mean, we can see that, like, it's probably a good deal for the club. We obviously have coverage now that we're not worried about. Do you think that we'll see Thiago Andrade playing for this side again in the future, or is this the beginning of the end?
No, I think that's it, man. I feel like it's kind of a three strikes, you're out kind of thing. Look, it's obviously like a fun player to watch, and like the ceiling that he offered is super tantalizing. I understand why the team signed him. I think it was great to sign him and Talish Magno at the same time. I get it. He was super good off the bench, creating depth and creating the verticality you need. Which, by the way, like, the one thing I hate about loaning him out is that we have zero verticality. We have the fucking slowest team in MLS now. But I think that, you know, he came in 2021, wasn't necessarily a deal, a game breaker, or and then in 2022, he had the opportunity to break into the rotation and he just couldn't do it. And then 2023 starts, like, he's coming into the offseason. It was mentioned many times, like, he wanted a starting role. This was the year he was going to be ready to take up the mantle, and he didn't. Like, I love that he went out on a good goal in DC and showed off, like, the kinds of things we've seen from him at his best moments. But, like, we can't let that blind us to the fact that he's been not a positive player on this team over the last 2 years. And I think that the team was just at a place where they're like, look, Brazil, the teams in Brazil want him back. He'll be more happy and comfortable there. We're getting in Richie Ledesma, which is going to cut down his minutes even more. It's just the time to, if you can make a deal like this happen, do it. And it opens up a U22 initiative slot. So, it just makes sense all around. It's sad because he was a nice guy, fun guy, obviously good in the locker room with the other Brazilians, being there, good friends with Talish Magno. You know, they're like brothers now. So that sucks. But outside of that, if you're looking purely from like a sporting perspective, outside of like the speed thing I mentioned, it's not too much love lost, you know. What about you? I thought you liked him.
I did like him. You know, I like fast guys. That's really what it comes down to. I'd like to analyze it more deeply than that, but I feel like what I liked about Thiago was that he had incredible breakaways. And he had occasionally really good vision with those breakaways. But I think ultimately, to me, he was a selfish player. You know? Then this is not a team that... I think there's a little bit of a magnet here, right, where you're like, oh, this is an amplified platform. NYCFC is necessarily an amplified platform. It's a bit of a bridge to the rest of the world from MLS. You understand all of this. And so, but ironically, I think that the team has always been at its best when it has a coach who has a really, really cohesive, who doesn't build the team around one player. With the exception of the, of the Tati Castellanos era. But even then, right, like, that was sort of, it, in a weird way, it almost felt like we fell backwards into it. Thiago did not ever find a way to build himself into a team, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And those flashes of brilliance did not make up for, we're not extraordinary enough to have the gravitational pull to assemble a team around him. There was no point. There was no need. And so there was just this sort of like, you know, nail sticking out of the board effect that you got, which was frustrating not to ever see it successfully integrated. And I wish him very well. I think he will have many years of good competitive soccer left in him. And I'm excited to hear about it through the grapevine.
Yeah, he's only 22, you know. He definitely has a whole future ahead of him. But he's got to show somewhere else that he can grow. Because he didn't in these prime years of that you develop players. Like, he showed zero development.
Yeah, that's right. Do you think that's a mentality thing? Or do you think that that's like a misfit thing? Such that, like, coaching just couldn't take him to a place that he needed to go?
I don't know, man. He had Kleberson as a coach, you know?
Yeah.
And I never heard anything bad about his mentality. I never witnessed anything bad. But if the team is not giving you opportunities and you have skill, then I don't know what else you say, you know? It just wasn't the right fit, I guess. More minutes for Richie Ledesma. That's why I tweeted. I'm glad some people caught on to my vague you meme when I put that out there. Did you see it?
No, I don't think I did. I don't even know what you're talking about.
When Thiago got loaned out, I just put a little picture of Penn Badgley in the hat being sneaky. Because now, if you ever see me posting anything from the TV show You, it will be about Richie Ledesma. Uh-huh. Just know that. Yes. And I think some people caught on to that.
Good. Yes, I see that. I see it now. I understand it. But it's...
Good.
It's a stretch. It's still... It's okay. I don't know.
We're building narratives, man. That's our job. Our job is not to be experts. Our job is not to fucking sell tickets for the club. Our job is not to... We're truth tellers and we're narrative builders. And that is a narrative, is that Richie Ledesma is Penn Badgley.
Right, let's build other narratives. Let's build some narratives.
But that's sure. Go ahead.
No. Get in there. More Penn Badgley.
No, just that. I think though, the only other thing is that it opens minutes for Richie, and I think Richie is very hungry to grow and make a difference.
Look, that's Trey, we've got two other leagues who opened since the last time we talked to our audiences, and we need to check in on both of them. What do you want to kick it off with, MLS Next Pro, or do you want to kick it off with the NWSL?
Let's talk briefly about MLS Next Pro.
Outfield article, match. Very worth reading if you want a perspective on 100%. The NYCFC2s, really frames it in terms of not only the success that we have had in the past with academy development and this quote-unquote league, but also what we can expect from the roster as it exists right now. We love the outfield when we're not actively writing for it. By we, I mean Trey, because they are doing the deep dives nobody else will do. And this article is no fucking exception.
Yeah, I actually have something I need to write in the next 3 weeks, and I'm not confident about it.
Well,
but you should go read Paul. If you're not subscribed to The Outfield, what are you doing? And you should go read Paul's piece on NYCFC 2. I will continue to say Paul is one of the best writers of soccer in North America. But I'm excited. It's good. Look, we're in a good place. Like, NYCFC 2 has retained a lot of players that developed super well in the last year. It has a lot of good players that are older that can show their talent. And we are now integrating more, you know, the next generation of academy players after a bit of a low spell of academy players. Very brief window of like less impactful academy players, which is hard to live up to James Sands and Gio Reyna, but now we're back in a place where those players are going to be back and making a difference. So MLS Next Pro, it's on Apple Plus, on the MLS plan season pass on Apple Plus, so you can watch all the games. Johnny Shore and Maximo Carrizo, of course, our two jewels from the academy, are currently in the Generation Adidas Cup, where our boys are killing it right now. But outside of that, we also have a lot of the fan favorites from last year, Pedro Elias and John Dennis and Nico, and Kwaku got some time, and Rando, the goalkeeper, and, you know, all the fun boys are back. And even though they didn't win in their first match, I'm super excited for all those players and to see what kind of impact they have. And to tie it to the first team, hey, Turnbull, we're out of loans for him now, out of our emergency loans. We used them all up because both of our young, expensive right backs are fragile, apparently. But Turnbull had a nice little, you know, showing against New England as well. And he is, you know, a product of lots of time in our MLS Next Pro team last year. So I would say tune in when you get a chance to the MLS Next Pro, read Paul's article, get to know those guys. I think we'll see a lot of them be more impactful in the future. And especially, like, get on the fucking Maximo Carrizo bandwagon now, because he is the next big NYCFC thing, and he looks the part, and you'll be seeing a lot more of him, if not during the Generation Adidas Cup that's going on right now, which you can also tune into, then catch him on MLS Next Pro this year. And again, we're going to try to do stuff with that. But yeah, that's my 3 minutes on MLS Next Pro.
And now that we're in the, like, now that we're in the thick of it and the discourse is sort of kicked off, have you adjusted your predictions as to whether or not Carrizo is going to get any pro minutes for the first team?
No, I still feel the same way. I still think he's too young, and I think it would be a mistake putting him in the first team right now. I think it's great to just let him get more comfortable with the more physical bodies in MLS Next Pro than he's used to again this year, and let him dominate. If he gets to the point where he's dominating as a 15-year-old against, you know, people 4 or 5 years older than him, then we can start having that discussion. But I think it's a good step for him to just get a majority of time with the Next Pro guys.
Yep. I agree with that. I think that maybe I was the one who took the over on this one, and I'm a little bit regretting it. I think that you're more right, because he's shown so much talent and potential that there is, and because the position that he occupies is really the focus of, as is written in this article, like, is the focus of scoring, and it's much more valuable for him to develop a sense of confidence in that incredibly high pressure position than sort of floating him through an appearance for an appearance's sake, right? his work,
yep.
his job, his position, his like excellence is too much about being clutch to put him in a position where it's impossible for him to successfully be clutch. So extend the development. The payoff will be good. Will be better in the long run, it seems like. What about NWSL?
Yeah, we just signed.
Oh, go ahead. Get in there.
Man, this is what doing those remote things is. I know, what
it'll
it does.
Fuck you right up.
That we just signed Santi Rodriguez to a DP deal, so it's like, what's the rush?
You know? Yeah, very true. Very true. Talk to me about the Women's League, Trey.
Women's, NWSL.
Did you follow Gotham these past 2 weekends?
Of course I did. I watched both games.
And
super excited about the first game. Went really well. Second game, not so much. I was commending, you know, I think the new coach is doing a good job. I think the players look much more comfortable, better, more dynamic, more exciting. It's like a 180 from how lifeless it was last year. We got Ali Long coming back, doing some good things. They're just not at the same level. They're not there yet. Like, they played the Reign, and the Reign are, like, the most, you know, they're the favorites to win the league this year, and they have, like, super, you know, chemistry to an extreme level and a lot of talent. So I wasn't expecting a win out of that game. But the first game gave me a lot of hope, because that's when we saw what I'm coining, and I hope it catches on, Persilliums. That's good, right? Mitch Purse and Lynn Williams fucking ran ramshod in that first match and fucking dominated. What am I trying to say?
Roughshod?
Help me out. Yes, thank you. They ran roughshod. you know, the biggest thing that made me go like, yes, absolutely, this is why you trade the number 2 overall pick for Lynn Williams, even if she's on the wrong side of 30, is that she fucking broke her arm in the first match and was like, fuck it, and scored a goal after that. Like, that's insane. And then she played, you know, she's still playing with that like faux cast, that like half cast that she's got. But the fact that Midge Purse has a partner to play with, like Midge had like a fantastic fake shot pass that set up Lynn for her goal. All positive things. The only problem I'm having with Gotham is that they drafted the best. It was like a steal. They got the best number 10 in college in the draft, and a later pick than I expected Nyswanger to go. But I was like, great, fucking a 10. That's what we need. And they have been playing her at left back. Don't know why. Don't know what happened. She's playing great because she's a good player. I just don't understand why left back is where they want her to be. But that's the story there. Like, imagine drafting like a Santi Rodriguez out of college if you had the opportunity and being like, you know, right back is where we want you. I just don't
is
get
that
it.
Where like are it. They just looking for depth back there? Are they trying to develop like,
oh yeah,
to broaden skills? Like, what's your educated guess?
My educated guess is, yeah, they have absolutely nothing. They have no depth back there. I mean, they have Bruninha on the right side, but they need to play Kelly O'Hara at center back because they have nothing else there. So, because homegirl just retired. Allie, you know what I'm talking about. Whatever. Fuck. It's really bothering me. I'm forgetting. It's like my sister's favorite player. I think it's just like it's an extreme lack of depth defensively. It's something they did not address well. And if you had to, I think they had a fantastic offseason. The one problem was they didn't add anything defensively. Outside of Bruninha, who I think is doing great. But it's a lack of depth thing. I don't agree with it. I think you're much better having Trash at left back and Nyswanger at the 10 than what we're doing. But what do I know? They have more talent on the field than if they didn't have Nyswanger at left back. I just don't like it. I don't know. I don't like it. But they're what we expected. Much more exciting than I thought they would be. So if you get a chance to watch Gotham, go ahead and do yourself a favor, because we got persilliums up front.
It's persilliums. I hear it. It's a season of persilliums. It's getting viral. It's going. I'm seeing hashtags popping up left and right on all of my feeds, on my 7 screens back here in my cave, in my monitor cave. But Trey, how do you find the time? I mean, really, there's so much to watch every weekend. It seems it's just a mad blitz all day and all night, except for on Apple TV. I have a question for you. Do you think that the way that these games are stacked is making it harder for Apple TV to successfully convert subscribers, given that there are so many matches that they can't watch if they watch even one? And how are you dealing with that as a league press voter?
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with you trying to gas me up all these times so you bring it up.
I'm just saying, you're watching things a little bit more. You're keeping a broader tag on everything. I'm speaking to you because I know that you take it seriously, and because the league has presented you with a unique challenge right now, which is to say, playing all the games at the same fucking time.
Yeah, for me personally, it sucks. I do not like spending my free time fast-forwarding through Vancouver beating Montreal 5-0 because Montreal got a red card early. Like, that's not how I didn't want to spend my time doing that, but I had to. As a fan of the sport, it's super... As a fan of, like, one team, it's super nice to not have blackouts, to know where I'm going to get my game, to know it's going to work, to not deal with, like... Oh, is it a yes two? Is it yes one? Do I have to stream? How do I get this? Like, none of that exists anymore. There's no blackouts, nothing. It's always at the same time, so you know to plan whether or not you can watch it. There's not this weird, like, ooh, I have to do something at 3, but the game starts at 1:30, so all that's out the window. That's good. It's more of, like, the fact that I have to, I think it's doing a bad job of, like, if you want to become a fan of the league, it's hard. You don't get those, like, marquee games that you can, like, flick on a Sunday afternoon. You know, MLS could get the national TV slots on Sundays afternoons super easy because there's nothing on. Now it's a lot harder. Now your only chance is like, oh, at halftime I can switch to a game, or after the game, if I'm not fucking tired or drunk or whatever, I can throw on the West Coast game. Outside of that, I like it a lot. No, I'm still a big fan of the MLS deal.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, it's really good for the league. It's the real issue is it good for Apple TV, and are we going to find ourselves in the exact same place that we were before this deal very shortly, right? If you're seeing numbers like 40% of targets.
I know. I saw that too, but it's like, who the fuck is that guy? not to be rude, fine. But like, I'm going to wait for, you know, an athletic piece about the actual subscription numbers. Then I heard from my
friend.
Just
following anecdotal evidence. Sure. Well, that only leaves one thing, Trey. It's midnight. It's pre-cap time. Lightning round pre-cap. The boys are coming home, and so is Georgia. Atlanta United coming back here Saturday. Once again, another 7:30 match. Keep them rolling. Keep them coming in. What does New York City have to do to consolidate some of the fragmented positive pieces of these last two matches and take away 3 points against Atlanta? Or is it in the bag because we cheat on our home field?
Also that, I wouldn't say it's in the bag, though. It's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. Atlanta's good. They're a good team. I would frankly say they're better than New England. I know what the records say and everything, but, you know, Atlanta got murdered by that international break in a way that New England wasn't, and they're just a better team. Thiago Mata is the thing. He's got 4 goals and 4 assists in 4 games. Like, maybe it's 5 games now. It doesn't matter. If it was 10 games, having 4 goals and 4 assists is insane. He's of the early, very, very, very early front runner, very, very, very clear front runner for MVP right now. And that sucks. It sucks that we're facing him like right when he's red hot. But can we find a way to eliminate him from the game as much as possible, the way we did with Carlos Gil? And can we deal with, like, they do a really good job of just throwing in random pieces that are one-dimensional guys that can just throw a game off balance? Some leggy sprinters, some destroying center midfielders. Like, they have the pieces this year. They were not going to spend 3 years in the basement. Like, they brought on the new coach last year. They got new front office staff. Like, they're back and ready to go. And I think it was most indicative. You can read, like, it's the reason that their match headlined Matt Doyle's weekly recap was because, like, the one team they couldn't beat was the Rebel. And they did, and pretty convincingly. The reason they couldn't was because they always panicked out of the press, which is one of the reasons why we were also very successful against them historically. I'm not scared of Atlanta as the idea. I'm scared of Atlanta as they are constructed right now. They just have a way to, they're just much more composed than they used to be, and they have a way of just creating those through balls in space that just fucking destroy a defense. My saving grace is that defensively, been super solid this year. I tweeted out the stats because we gotta give credit where it's due. We have not given up many open play goals at all. Also, the one thing I left out of there is we've given up the most amount of goals off of fouls, off of dead ball opportunities. And that's something we got to stop doing. And against Atlanta, it can become a mud fight because they're also a very aggressive team that fouls a lot. That's been one of their weaknesses, is that it disrupts the style that they want to play. They want to be more fluid. Can we be clean against a wild... Can we be clean, which is off personality for us, against a team that is also not very clean when it comes to, they're very aggressive. So that's going to be a key. But you look at the success we had at home in the last two matches, like, you have to be optimistic. Richie Ledesma, does he get the start? I don't know. But with everything else in line outside of the number nine position, I have no choice but to be at least a little confident, because I think, again, 1 point on the road in 2 games, blah, 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 but we did okay. And I think doing okay on the road after being great at home is good. It's just, we're running into a buzzsaw at the wrong time. And I expect to win, but this is going to be one of our more important matches this season. This is a real litmus test right now.
I feel like, hearing you say it, I worry that it requires a little bit of a mentality shift that I don't know if this team can pull off that elegantly. You know, it's not just that we need to protect against, like, real scrappy, like, bruiser attitude. It's also that we need to do it in a mode of play that we are not that comfortable in, which is to say, by not throwing down ourselves. I don't know. I agree with you. Like, dead ball opportunities. I love that you brought up the flip side coin of dead ball opportunities, because of course, like, it's one of the ways that we try to control the flow of the game, but it's also one of the ways that we expose ourselves to assault. I mean, more like by a massive margin, obviously, this season. I think the home field advantage remains, like, more compelling than anything else. And it's the reason that I'll still predict a win, besides the fact that we always predict a win on this show. But it will be... Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. I'm excited.
Yeah, I think I am going to say, like, the most important player in this match is going to be Brian Kouffre, because I think using the advantage of the home field where he doesn't, there's kind of less space where he needs to cover and track back. And also the fact that we'll need to create gravity on that side of the field to expose their weaknesses to keep the ball away from Thiago Almada is like, that's the most. Oh my God, I didn't even bring up Giakoumakis, who's like, you know, the striker they signed from Celtic, who is someone I absolutely wanted on this team. I'm very mad they got him because I fucking love him as a player. Just real fucking brick shithouse at the nine position who knows how to score goals. But that's going to be tough. But I think, you know, Chanot, he's been through. He knows what to, he just got done defending Cristiano. So I think, you know, he's ready for Giakoumakis. But I think Kouffre is going to be the most important player on this field. In this game,
I'm excited to see what he does with it, with that heavy responsibility. What's your scoreline, Trey?
Let's go 2-1, the good guys.
Ooh.
What about you?
I must call another 1-1 draw. I think I'll take the pessimistic tack on this.
Is that good? Is that a good thing?
No, I don't think so.
Probably the best team in the East.
It was good last week. I don't think it's good this week. Not at home.
It's such a, when I say litmus test, it's such a good litmus test because, like, it's very clear there's like four ish really good teams in the East, and everyone else is just trying to figure things out. And then you have us, who is like historically very good, but in transition. Are we still good, or are we like the other teams?
Yeah, even we don't know.
We don't have no idea.
Nowhere even close.
I have no idea.
But we're going to keep on trying to figure it out. Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about
you? At Jake Beckhard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls Pod.
Blue Balls Pod, baby.
The merch is in the link tree, my friends. So is the Cash App. If you want to drop a dollar in the tip jar to keep our lights on, we'd really appreciate it. We're trying to upgrade some hardware coming up soon. So, you know, if you want to prime the pump there, it'd be very, very much appreciated. Otherwise, we will catch you on the other side of Atlanta. Thanks so much for listening to yet another week of Rapturous Pod Talk. We'll see you then. Bye.
Bye. I have two plugs I forgot.
Oh, get them in there.
Which is the Twitter handle BushwickNYCFC. That's at BushwickNYCFC is doing some kind of donation thing to win an Alex Ring jersey, and the proceeds go to South Bronx United, so check that out. Also, shout out Will, Holly for, of course, doing our end of the music you're listening to right now. We have not shouted them out this year. Also, those last two plugs are completely unrelated. I would never dox someone. Also, Westchester Third Rail is still going strong. They want you to know that if you're up in Westchester, you can go watch to their watch parties. Just look up the Westchester Third Rail. Okay, that's it.
Bye.
Bye.